This is an ABC podcast.
Afternoon, welcome to The World Today. I'm Thomas O'Riti. Coming up this Monday, further moves towards a post-COVID-19 life. A big step for kids and an even bigger step for their parents as many schools around the country reopened today. But some families have actually decided homeschooling works for them.
We have found that it's been really advantageous because our children, being gifted children, are able to work at their own level and are able to work at a level above what might be on offer in a traditional school classroom.
The first, Australians are edging closer to normality as the states and territories begin easing restrictions and reopening the economy. Now, Victoria's the latest jurisdiction to outline its plans. And as business owners prepare to ramp up activity in line with the relaxing of social distancing measures, some aren't so sure it's financially feasible. Gavin Coote's been following the story. He joins me now with the latest. Afternoon, Gav. So Victoria's the most recent state to unveil its changes. What's happening there?
Yeah, Tom, Victoria remains the state with the second highest number of COVID-19 cases, just under about 1,500. It's recorded 7 new cases in the past 24 hours. And under eased restrictions, Victorians will be able to have 5 guests in their home from midnight tomorrow night on Tuesday, and outdoor gatherings up to 10 people will be allowed. Now, Victoria's state of emergency was due to expire, but it's actually now been extended until Sunday the 31st of May. So still a lot of consideration for the health side of things. People are still being encouraged to work from home where possible. And Premier Daniel Andrews has stressed visitors should be limited to friends and family and have a bit of common sense in this.
Whilst it is now allowed, or from midnight tomorrow night it will be allowed, for you to go and have dinner or a visit with family and friends, that doesn't mean, and it is not an invitation, to be having a dinner party at every house every night.
Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews and Gavin Coutts with me. So, Gav, we're getting a fair bit more clarity now on how some of the other states and territories will ease those restrictions. What do we know about the developments elsewhere?
Well, a number of different changes have been announced in recent days. Of course, Queensland and New South Wales are among some of the states, the first states to unveil their plans to roll back restrictions. South Australia has always allowed up to 10 people at a gathering, as long as they remain 1.5 metres apart. But the first push in that state to lift restrictions involves the opening up of regional travel, camping grounds, and allowing outdoor dining for cafes and restaurants. That's come into effect today in South Australia. As for Western Australia, from next Monday, people will be allowed to gather in groups of up to 20. That's indoors or outdoors. And these gatherings of up to 20 can happen in cafes, bars, and restaurants, provided there are 4 square metres of space per customer. And neither WA nor the Northern Territory, which have border closures, they're unlikely to open their borders anytime soon. In fact, that's likely to be one of the very last measures they'll take. But the NT has already begun easing some other rules. From Friday, bars will be allowed to open, but alcohol will only be able to be served alongside a meal.
You know, the impact on businesses is obviously a big issue here. What's been the reaction from business owners who have been encouraged to open back up in line with these rules?
Well, Tom, of course, all of these easing restrictions is geared around getting businesses back up and running, getting people back into work, while ensuring the spread of COVID-19 is kept to a minimum. So in New South Wales, which has been one of the worst affected state and one of some of the strictest as far as lockdown laws, those will be eased slightly from this Friday. So up to 10 people will be able to dine in at cafes and restaurants at any time. But many operators aren't sure whether they'll be able to reopen. So Chef Luke Mangan, who owns restaurants in Sydney, he told Nine that it'll be tricky to have 10 people, 10 customers, all socially distanced while making this financially viable.
I think for our industry, they must keep JobKeeper on if we're going to be doing smaller numbers, restaurants at 20% capacity, 30% capacity, even 50%. It's hard enough to make a dollar in these restaurants as it is. And we need more people in our restaurants to create that atmosphere and get staff back working.
Chef Luke Mangan, Gavin Coote reporting there. Well, temperature checks, hand sanitizer, playground cleaning, just some of the measures in place as many children return to school today. In Queensland and New South Wales, thousands were welcomed back to class under staged returns. And for some, it's been 6 weeks since they've been there. And he guessed what along to a Queensland primary school before the bell.
There were teachers, balloons and welcome signs at the separate designated entrances for preps and year ones at Sanford Primary School just north of Brisbane. Like many schools welcoming back the two youngest and oldest grades in Queensland, strict instructions had been emailed that parents were not to enter the grounds. Here, footstep markers on the ground help people distance themselves before the first kiss goodbye at the school gate in 6 weeks.
Great.
What's great about coming back to school?
Seeing my teachers and all my friends.
Have you missed them?
Yes.
What's homeschooling been like?
Good.
It's definitely been challenging. It's been a bit of a juggle, but certainly makes you appreciate teachers and the school system a lot more. So, yeah, it's been fun. You know, it's had its ups and downs, but we're glad everyone's going back today. There's definite upsides to having the kids out of the home while you're trying to work and run a business.
It's awesome. Fantastic. It's good for the kids to get back.
Do you feel confident about the health side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. No problem at all.
What do you think, darling?
Nervous.
Hello.
I'm here to go back to school.
Why are you here, Edie?
Because I want to go, because I miss my friend Madeline.
We're very excited to be going back to school.
Why are you so excited?
I'm not a teacher. But Ella's very excited. She's missed her friends.
I was so excited because I love to go to school and it's the best way how to learn, how you know how to learn letters and animals so you know what the truth is.
Are you in prep?
Yes.
The principal, Brad Clark, applauded teachers and parents who enthusiastically embraced homeschooling. But he said face-to-face education is different.
Seeing students back at school, we have different feedback loops. So when you're in a conversation with a person in a room, it's really different to having a conversation to someone online. So the nuance of teaching is at its greatest when people are connected together.
Like schools elsewhere around the country, Mr. Clark says health measures are in place at this large Queensland primary school.
So we have put into place some additional protocols like closing down the bubblers or cleaning down playgrounds or classrooms that are cleaned out throughout the school day as well. The protocols we've got in place are students will use hand sanitizer before and after using the playground, and the playground's also going to be cleaned by our cleaning staff throughout the day as well, just as an extra layer of protection.
There are also special arrangements for some vulnerable teachers. In New South Wales, about one quarter of the state's school children are back one day a week from today. Elsewhere around the country, children are back in the classrooms in South Australia and the Northern Territory. In the ACT, schools reopen mid-May. Western Australian schools are back at the end of the month, about the same time Tasmania will begin a staged return, while Victoria is still considering timeframes for when students return to class.
Any guest reporting, homeschooling is working for some families, and later in the show we'll speak to parents who say they see the advantages of keeping their kids at home. But first to the situation overseas, and each country is approaching the easing of restrictions in a different way. In the UK, people are now being told to return to work if they're not able to work from home. But schools won't be back at all for at least a few more weeks. Restrictions also continue to be eased in other hard-hit countries, such as Germany, for example, but there are some indications the infection rate there is on the rise again. Barbara Miller has the latest.
In an address to the nation complete with glossy slides and lots of fist clenching, the British Prime Minister outlined the easing of some restrictions imposed because of the virus. The biggest change is that those who are unable to work from home should now return to work.
Anyone who can't work from home, for instance, those in construction or manufacturing, should be actively encouraged to go to work.
But there are caveats, as Boris Johnson outlined.
We want it to be safe for you to get to work, so you should avoid public transport if at all possible. But just as with workplaces, public transport operators will also be following COVID secure standards.
The new plan, or at least the execution of it, is not supported by the opposition Labour Party. Its leader is Keir Starmer.
Well, what the country wanted tonight was clarity and consensus. And I'm afraid we've got neither. This statement raises as many questions as it answers. The Prime Minister appears to be effectively telling millions of people to go back to work tomorrow, but we haven't got the guidelines and we don't know how it's going to work with public transport. So there's a huge number of questions arising out of this.
With the UK government's partial back-to-work plan comes a new slogan. So far, it's been stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives. That's now been amended.
We must stay alert, control the virus, and save lives.
But the leaders of Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland say that's too much, too soon. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon.
I have asked the UK government not to deploy their Stay Alert advertising campaign in Scotland, because the message in Scotland at this stage is not stay at home if you can. The message is, except for the essential reasons you know about, stay at home. Full stop.
In Germany, the weekend saw protests in Stuttgart and Berlin against the coronavirus restrictions. The protesters had their own slogan, sleep, consume, obey, for what they say is an attack on democracy. Some restrictions are being eased in Germany, with shops, playgrounds and museums now able to open, but there are some indications that the infection rate in the country could be on the rise again. The reproduction rate of the virus, how many people one person with it infects, has crept above one for the first time in weeks. In Shanghai, in China, Disneyland is open again. But a cluster in the northeast of the country has led authorities to raise the risk level in Jilin province to high. And Wuhan, where it all began, has recorded its first new case in 5 weeks. As leaders across the world are cautioning, it can be a case of one step forward, one back.
Barbara Miller reporting. On ABC Radio, across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks very much for your company. You can find all of our stories on the show's website. Just search for The World Today. You can also subscribe to our podcast. And speaking of which, the ABC also has a podcast which answers your biggest questions about the coronavirus. It's called CoronaCast. Once again, it can be found on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, the initial economic carnage as a result of the pandemic will be revealed in the coming days as the federal government confronts that challenge of getting homebound workers back on the job. With the latest, I spoke earlier to the ABC senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, there are some very gloomy predictions out this morning about the economic cost of this pandemic, which are, of course, in stark contrast to this time last year. So will Australia be able to crawl out of this economic hole?
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. Yes, it's hard to believe, but a year ago, all the talk was about the budget being back in the black, with the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, forecasting a budget back in surplus. Now Deloitte Access Economics sees the budget deficit this financial year hitting a record $143 billion as the economic downturn from the virus hits hard. Now, normally we'd be heading off to Canberra to cover the release of the federal budget. That's been put off until October, but instead, the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, will deliver a budget update in a speech to Federal Parliament tomorrow, when we'll get the latest thinking of the cost blowout for more than $300 billion in emergency stimulus, including the $130 billion JobKeeper program, and most likely an appeal for economic reform in the wake of the crisis. Now, the outlook does sound gloomy, but all going well, those deficits should shrink in the coming years, if business reopens, if people get back to work, get off the JobKeeper and don't need to defer their loan repayments until after September, given that there's around about $160 billion in mortgages on hold. Deloitte Access Economics partner Chris Richardson says, yes, it will be a hard road, but he thinks the economy is well positioned to rebound.
We can, you know, our defence against the virus has been world leading. We can snap back a lot of the way and a lot early than much of the rest of the world. We're opening up from a position of strength, but it only gets you part of the way. When you start at an unemployment rate of 10%, that's a real challenge. We know that unemployment goes up much faster than it comes down.
Chris Richardson from Deloitte Access Economics, and Peter Ryan's with me. Peter, as Chris Richardson says, it's now all about jobs. How bad is the jobless rate going to get?
Well, Tom, the health crisis might be public enemy number one at the moment, but soon it has to be jobs. And we'll get an update on Thursday when the official employment numbers from the ABS are released. Forecasts are for a jobless rate to surge to 8.3% in April. That's up from 5.2%, with around 575,000 jobs having evaporated from the workforce. Now, that might sound bad enough, but those numbers don't include stood-down workers on the JobKeeper program. So the full reality is a lot worse than the official ABS survey. The Reserve Bank sees the jobless rate peaking at 10%, and even after any recovery, it sees unemployment remaining above 6% by next year. So the big challenge is ahead with a deep recession, but all going well, the economy is expected to spring back next year. But of course, there are a lot of very big ifs.
Peter Ryan reporting there. Just to some other news now, and new figures have revealed the mammoth cost of the cleanup from the devastating summer bushfires and the delays in getting it done. The Prime Minister has committed $2 billion to a bushfire recovery fund, and at least a quarter of that will be spent on removing the trail of debris across parts of the country. The government's also providing more details about how the billions will be spent in communities dealing with that double whammy, firstly of bushfires and now, of course, the coronavirus. For more, I spoke to our political reporter, Anna Henderson.
Well, Tom, first came the bushfires, and this debris is a constant reminder of that deadly and traumatic summer that they've been through. And then the pandemic came, just when people were getting back on their feet. So a lot of these communities are feeding back that they were relying on tourism to kickstart the recovery, to pay the bills, and suddenly no one was coming to their communities. So while the debris removal has been progressing, and we've seen lots of figures on that in New South Wales and Victoria, there are places like Cobargo in the Bega Valley, which is one of the hardest hit part of the main street, was reduced to rubble. And the cleanup is only starting now, 4 months after the inferno hit. So Andrew Hayden owned a number of affected businesses in Cobargo. He says everyone there has been frustrated by how long things have taken, but he also thinks getting rid of the buildings will be a big boost.
I think a lot of the community have been suffering sort of from, you know, sort of post-traumatic stress. There's been some depression, and it's even occurring now, possibly worse than soon after the fires. But I think, you know, once the main street's cleaned up, I think it'll be a turning, basically, of the whole thing. Wow, there's finally something happening.
Andrew Hayden, a business owner in Cobargo, that's in the Bega Valley in southeast New South Wales, and Anna Henderson's with me. Anna, is the assistance hitting the ground fast enough?
Well, in pre-pandemic times, some of these figures are enormous. $500 million being spent on cleanup, and a similar amount ploughed into grants, loans and emergency payments, part of that $2 billion bushfire assistance fund the Prime Minister announced in January. But lots of people are experiencing delays getting access to the bigger money. They can easily get the $1,000 support or the $10,000 grants that, you know, help them pay those immediate bills. But bigger loans to help them rebuild infrastructure or get their businesses going again are much slower to be approved. The application process is complicated, and there have been months of delays for people to get answers. The fear is people will give up and they'll sell up, leaving some of these areas right when they need that community support and community approach. So today the government talked about the remaining $650 million that's in this bushfire fund. It will be spent on local recovery projects, wildlife assistance and extra support in terms of telecommunications for emergency broadcasting. But people on the ground will be hungry for more detail about this, and we don't have it yet. The government has established this National Bushfire Recovery Agency, and the Prime Minister says he is confident that process is working.
The initial shock and trauma of going through a crisis such as this can leave you just standing there, devastated, unable to reach out and connect to the supports that are available. And so that's been the work of the recovery agency, working with state and territory organisations and charitable organisations to take that support and connect it to people on the ground.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. Anna, while we've got you there, the Prime Minister's also dealing with China's threat to put tariffs on Australia's barley exports. Now, is this linked to the push for an independent coronavirus investigation?
Well, that's certainly what government sources are worried about, that this is the first shot being fired in a ramping up of a diplomatic row that's been emerging between Canberra and Beijing, because China's threat to impose these tariffs would rip hundreds of millions of dollars from the trade. Barley is Australia's second most valuable agricultural export to China, and the concern is that this is just the beginning. But the Prime Minister was asked today whether he agrees with that assessment. He says he doesn't see it as retribution for the push for the independent an investigation into the origins of coronavirus. And China says publicly this is an anti-dumping issue. They think that Australia is subsidising its barley industry through the fuel rebate and drought support measures. But of course, everything is being read through the lens of coronavirus tensions now, and this issue is no different. So Federal Labor has commented on this today, saying the government needs to show leadership. Joel Fitzgibbon, the Shadow Agriculture Minister, says Australia needs to be assertive while maintaining good relations with China.
Anna Henderson reporting there. We heard about schools earlier, and as more and more students look at heading back there, many parents are breathing a sigh of relief that learning from home is over, as we heard. But some parents have discovered their children are actually thriving at home, and they're exploring whether to continue those arrangements post-coronavirus. Home education networks are receiving inquiries from parents interested in registering for homeschooling. But one education expert says while the virus has opened up those opportunities for schooling to be more flexible, families don't need to go to the extreme of ditching the classroom. Ellen Coulter reports.
Kylie Pearson and her three school-aged daughters had a bit of a rough start to learning from home.
Initially, it was the software, internet wasn't working, and the teachers couldn't navigate them like what they needed to do, which is not really on them, it was sort of thrust upon them.
But the early hiccups have been overcome. Kylie Pearson says home learning has allowed her children to focus on what they enjoy, and it's allowed her to pick up on what they need help with, such as maths and handwriting.
Two of my kids are on the spectrum, one with ADHD as well, and I've just noticed that how they're slipping through the cracks.
While many parents are breathing a sigh of relief that their children may soon be able to return to school, Kylie Pearson is considering whether homeschooling might be the answer for her family post-coronavirus.
But I'm not naive. It might not work for all the kids, and just knowing that that's an option is really great.
The Home Education Association in New South Wales and the Victorian-based Home Education Network have both been fielding queries from parents who are considering registering for longer-term homeschooling after coronavirus gave them a taste of learning from home. QUT education lecturer Rebecca English says she's not surprised.
I imagine that for families, particularly those where they have a child who might be gifted and talented, maybe they have a child with a diagnosis. So, for example, an ASD or children who are ADHD, maybe children who have had some trauma in the past might be finding the working from home much more relaxing and calming.
In Tasmania, Kat Medicki's four school-aged children have all been identified as gifted. She's a qualified teacher and says the learning from home period has allowed the family to tailor their learning so the children are being challenged. Her children have been complementing their schoolwork with online university courses.
We have found that it's been really advantageous because our children, being gifted children, are able to work at their own level and are able to work at a level above what might be on offer in a traditional school classroom.
The family is strongly considering longer-term homeschooling.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there are other families who may not have felt that they had the confidence to facilitate their gifted child's learning, now realising that they can do it and now realising that, hey, there are benefits.
Education expert John Hattie believes the coronavirus pandemic has opened up opportunities for different and more flexible ways of teaching and learning.
I hope that when we go back to the new normal, there will be opportunities for students to learn by themselves in small groups, not necessarily always in the classroom.
But Professor Hattie is not a fan of homeschooling for most students, who he says are only as good as their teacher.
But I'd be quite a fan of the schools working the other way around, with parents who are prepared to take on some of the tasks at home and do it from that perspective. And so there is plenty of opportunities there without having to go to the extreme of homeschooling.
Education expert John Hattie, that report from Ellen Coulter. And that's all from the World Today team for this Monday. Thanks very much for your company. Hope you can join us at the same time tomorrow. I'm Thomas Ariti. Please stay safe. Have a lovely afternoon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.